everyone. Hop on the telephone line and welcome back to the show. One of our favorite people to talk with, the very talented Perry Gilpin joins us. Hello there, Perry.
Hello, Rich. How are you?
Just great.
I'm so glad I'm one of your favorite people.
In the world, like top three all time. Come on now.
That's awesome. I mean, I'm the mother of two 17-year-olds that don't like me at all. So that is really nice.
Wow. When did that start? Because I've got a little guy who's eight, and I'm wondering, and there are days when he's just annoyed or bored with me, but at what point will he decide that I don't know anything at all?
I don't know. It sneaks up on you, and with boys, I think it's a little different than girls, but maybe that'll never happen with a boy. I don't know. I don't think it has to happen. It definitely happened here.
I can't imagine two 17-year-olds. I deal with 17-year-olds as a teacher, but I don't have to have them in my house.
Well, they're great. I just do annoying things. So it's got to be me. But honestly, they're really different, and they're great. And I am obsessed with politics. And then we don't have to talk about it, but I'm just obsessed with what's going on right now. And I want to see the big picture. I'm not dyed in the wool. I'm just interested in what's going on around us. And I was about to tell my kid something yesterday, and her guy friend was standing next to her, and I go, are you from a conservative family or a liberal family? And he looked at me and he goes, well, kind of, I think my family's more liberal, but and my daughter said, I need to speak to you in the other room.
Oh man,
you cannot ask people that, and you cannot bring your politics into my. And I'm like, okay, I got you, you're right. What I was going to tell her was something that had to do with college. It wasn't even something political, but anyway, it was just something that I thought, maybe I just won't say anything in front of this kid because I don't want him to think she's got a crazy mom.
No, nobody would think that. Now, are they interested in at all in what's going on? Because one of my concerns is that the world seems so crazy that I can see a lot of teenagers just saying, man, everything involved with politics is just, it's awful, and it's a waste of our time to pay attention to it.
I don't know. I mean, like, I was reading all this stuff today about on Twitter about, how Neil Young and Joni Mitchell are the establishment, and I'm like, that's really weird. excuse me. I snorted. I mean, that is really weird that now Neil Young and Joni Mitchell are the establishment because they actually said, we don't want to be part of something that we don't believe in, It's just so weird how it all gets turned around, and I think it might be a little confusing for kids, but I also think that they take social media with all the grains of salt that we should all take it with.
Right. Oh, I agree with you completely on that. It's an interesting time, though, and people sometimes understand just enough about how things work to be dangerous, and I'll hear people talk about, well, that's, you can't tell Joe Rogan or whoever, that's free speech. Well, look, free speech just means you won't go to jail for the things you say. It doesn't mean there will not be consequences for your actions.
Yeah, and that the other part of this is, I mean, I was telling you earlier when we were talking, I listened to The Daily this morning. It's a really good one where the guy that hosts it has an hour with Fauci. And anything the guy says, that Fauci says, listen, you just got something wrong and you can't right now. Anything can be taken out of context. He goes, I just want to clearly say this. And it was like an hour of just the details of what they're, what they're thinking now based on what they're seeing and leaving things open for what they might see later. And that's what I don't understand is why people are expecting answers when how could anyone know? We have to do this all together and work together. And I mean, our country went to the moon. We built the Panama Canal. I mean, we've done so many amazing things together. And it's really sad that we can't get on the same page.
And I don't know what happened in terms of science. I mean, you're younger than me, but when we were in school, people worshiped science. That was the highest calling. And I think part of it was, you know, we wanted to win the race to the moon and all of that. But we valued the opinions of people in science. And I don't know how we got to this point where we just flat out have a segment of the population that doesn't trust science at all.
I don't know. And Bush was, George Bush Jr. was obsessed with pandemics. And he was terrified of them. You know, he's the one that set up a lot of the CDC, the ways to avoid it or the ways to handle it. Obama stopped Ebola in Africa through, you know, the medical corps, and he put up, you know, he had the cancer, I mean, I'm sorry, not the cancer panel, the pandemic panel that was completely, you know, broken down or by Trump in his administration. So I just, this is also a guy that told people to drink bleach, you know, so I think it feels like it was kind of purposely or deliberately, the confusion was deliberate by an administration that I don't know why they wanted to make us distrust science. I don't know why that was done, but I don't know who that served, but it certainly didn't serve us.
That's for sure.
You know, and what Fauci was saying now is that, you know, yes, one day it might be like a cold, but right now we still have 2,200 people dying a day, you know, and we still have all these cases coming up. And so we have to, you can't treat it like a cold yet. It's just bizarre that people can't see that and understand it.
Absolutely. We're talking with Perry Gilpin here on Downtown. Well, let's talk about some happier things. You were telling me that you shot a pilot recently. What can you tell us about what I was doing while you were breeding?
Well, I'm not sure what I can tell you.
Oh, okay.
but I play the mother of the lead, and it's just a really great pilot. It's a great story. This woman named Kristen Newman is a writer. She's a sitcom writer and has been for years, and has worked on great shows like How I Met Your Mother and The Big Bang Theory. And, you know, she's got a lot of experience in sitcom writing. And so she plays a sitcom writer, or this Chelsea Frey actually does, plays her. So that's the lead character. So in the hiatuses, you know how we always talk about our hiatuses? There's a big one. Like you go to work for a few weeks and then you take a week off. And then it's like usually three and one, because the writers need that hiatus week to catch up. And then after with Frasier, it was like 22 episodes. But now most shows, especially ones that are not on network television, might shoot like 10. So you don't hear that name as much anymore. But back when she wrote this, a book about this, she would take her long hiatuses, and instead of try, as a lot of women writers do, that's when they try to have a baby, or that's when they try to, you know, get things done like that, because it's hard when you don't know your schedule. She would go on these big vacations and have blasts and meet men and, you know, party and just do everything that she couldn't do while she was working. So that's what it's about. And it's really, mainly, it's like a travelogue. You know, she loved traveling. She loved, you know, just kind of jumping into other cultures and really having a great time getting to know the people of the place where she was. And so she wrote a book called What I Was Doing While You Were Breeding. And then I think it became really popular during the lockdown. I think people ordered it and read it, and it became a big, big deal. And so now she's made it into a TV show and for Freeform. And there are scenes in it that I've never seen on TV before. You know, but I have seen in real life, you know, and I really like that. And I think Kristen's a really wonderful writer. So it's interesting.
Now, there used to be pilot season. Does that Does that still exist anymore, or is it simply you create a pilot, you send it to people you hope are interested, and then hope for the best?
I don't know. I mean, I think there really is a pilot season still for network, just because everyone's still on that. It almost mimics the school season, you know? You know how they, because everything premieres in September, you know, and then
right.
it ends the summertime. So I feels like it has to do with that, but that's less and less because shows, you know, shoot all year long now. They premiere all year long. But I still think the networks are kind of on that schedule. So there is definitely a pilot season, but then there's also stuff that goes on all year.
You're also going to be on an upcoming episode of a terrific series, Kevin Can Go F Himself.
That's right. I'm going to play her mom, Patty's mom. I'm very excited about it. I haven't gone to shoot it yet, but I'm going to go in a... So, you know, I don't know if it'll stay the same, but right now it's pretty interesting. It's such a great show.
Oh, it's wonderful. And thanks again, too. I was so glad that you got us together with Siobhan Fallon Hogan, and we had a great time talking with her about the movie Rushed. You were so good in that, and I know there were even some buzz that was being put out there for potential awards as well, but regardless of what happens there, what a wonderful movie and so many strong performances.
Yeah, I think that's one of those movies that, you know, I think, like the other day I was at lunch and a friend of mine said, you've got to watch Mr. In Between. You've got to watch it. Have you ever heard of this?
I have not, no.
Okay. I came home and said to my husband, okay, Cindy says we've got to watch Mr. In Between. We have been obsessed. We can't believe we haven't heard of it. We can't believe we haven't seen it yet. It is so good. You'll see what it is immediately when you start watching it. So it may not be everybody's cup of tea, but I swear I can't imagine people not loving it. And it's just so well written, and it's so psychologically interesting. And I think that's what's so great about Rushed, is that there's something for everyone in it, but it has an amazing message, you know, that you can really dig into and think about. And it does ask you to change the way you think about something, and a lot of people don't want to do that, but it makes a really good point. You know, and so I think Siobhan did such a great job, and her just to get it made was so, it just took, you know, real determination, and she did it. She's making another, I think they just finished shooting a second one, and I kind of love that she raised her children, she got them up, you know, through college, and she went, okay, now I'm going to go back to what I love doing, and she really did.
All right, I'm reading online here about Mr. In Between. All I had to see was British crime drama, and I know my wife will love it because anything British, she loves.
It's not British.
Oh, it's not?
Australian.
Oh, wait.
No, it's Australian.
Oh, so there's a different, well, there are two Mr. In Betweens. Oh, I see. Oh, black comedy crime drama. Okay, good.
Yes. And, maybe it's loosely based on the English one or something. I don't know, but it is. It's so good.
Oh, it's on FX. All right. Well, I've got to check that out.
Yeah.
Then. Absolutely.
Yeah, I hope everyone does.
I always try to bring up something you've done in your terrific career. And I don't know that I've ever asked you about the wonderful voiceover work you did on King of the Hill.
Oh, yeah. That was fun.
I
love Mike Judge.
He's great.
I was so thrilled to, you know, he did. Two of the writers from Frasier were on Beavis and Butthead with him from the very beginning, and they worked with him a lot, and they talked him into coming on. So, you know, he played, I don't know if you ever remember this episode of Frasier where we had to all do a sexual harassment.
The training, yes. The
seminar, yeah. Mike Judge played the guy that did that.
Oh, God. Oh, wow.
And we were so, like, thrilled to have him on the set, but he's kind of incognito because... You might not know exactly what he looks like, you know? So it was really great seeing him, and it was great working with him, and he was really funny. And I just kept thinking, that's Hank Hill, you know, I just love it. But then when I started going and doing it, I got to play, I actually played several characters, and I could not believe what an amazing job Kathy Najimy did, as not, even though she's not from Texas. Like, she really, really, and I am from Texas, and I thought whoever's doing this is very authentic, and I was surprised to see it was a woman from San Diego.
Now, do you? I've talked to a couple actor friends lately about doing self tapes, which a lot of people have to do these days rather than auditioning in person. Have you had to go through that process, or are you just at the point where people go, "We need Perry Gilpin. We know what she can do."
No, I am not at that place.
Well,
I do.
You should be.
And oh, you're so sweet. I do self tapes a lot, and it's just been a very interesting, learning experience, because, you know, if you've worked a lot, you know that someone's going to do your makeup, someone's going to step in and go, wait, she's got a hair in the, she's got a, you know, her makeup's messed up, she's sweating, whatever, we got to powder her, the light's not working, the sun has changed, the light's moved, you got to move the camera, you know, there's 500 people doing all this stuff that makes it look right, you know, and you're just supposed to do your part. Because you know, my husband always says, why don't you have a mirror with you? And I'm like, because then you're going into like a territory of you're thinking about the wrong thing, you know? But I think that with self-tape, you know, if you're trying to do it on your own camera or you're trying to do it yourself, it takes me hours, because I keep seeing the light change, I keep seeing things move, and you know, you're kind of in your own vortex, you're by yourself, you know, like you can really get caught in a lot of stuff that makes it overwhelming. And I know people that say that they do it and they've mastered it, and I really thought during COVID that we would all master it, but it kind of just got more and more confusing to me. but they're fun to do, because you are working. I love auditioning, because you know it's like acting, you know, and you're playing with something that usually you're never going to do in a million years, or you know, it's the only way you'll ever do that part is to just delve into it in an audition situation. And so they've got their, I don't see much difference between it and actually going in and preparing a scene and going in, driving across town and going in and meeting somebody. It's all the same amount of stress or whatever, or joy or frustration. But it, technically, it's interesting. Have you done one?
Oh, God, no. I'm so self-conscious about that. It's hard enough to audition, you know, when especially if... I think the last time I auditioned for anything, they had asked it was for theater, and can you bring in a dramatic monologue and a comedic monologue? And I would just obsess over what's the best monologue. So if it were just me and no one to tell me, hey, straighten your shirt, fix your hair, whatever, it would be a disaster.
Right. And I when I was in New York years ago, I somehow got to go in and be a reader for somebody. I can't remember what the circumstances were. But I read with some really, really well-known actors of the time, and watching them do things that were so successful in the room, and then I've also produced a play and saw this then too, and then watched people do things that just shot themselves in the foot. You know, I think casting directors are dying for you to do a great job, because if they can cast this part and you're it, then they can move on to the next thing or be finished, you know? And so they're not, but I think it's really easy for us as actors to think that no one's on our side, right? You know, and that we're up against the world, and we're really not, you know, but, you know, I have done everything from like spray my hair gray because I thought a gray hair would be better. And my agent called me up and go, well, just do it. Let them worry about the aesthetics. I'm like, I think this part should have gray hair, you know. So you know, you when you're on your own, you can so easily be kind of get a little amateurish, I guess, is what I'm saying, you know, but because you're trying to solve all of these problems and, you know, half of them you would never, ever be asked to solve.
By the way, I thought of you the other night. It was channel surfing, and an episode of The Monkees came on, and Bobby Sherman was in it, and that immediately made me think of you.
Oh, my God. Why?
Didn't you tell me that you had a little thing for Bobby Sherman when you were young?
How did... Oh, my God. I just can't believe you remembered that. I was so in love with him, I wrote him a letter and asked him to marry me and everything. But then, I told you he came on Frasier, right?
Right, right.
So that was really interesting because, you know, I got to meet him as an older person. And he was so nice. He was such a nice guy. He had left the business, and he was an EMT. And I think he helped birth two babies, and he had one of them named after him. And, you know, he had really changed his life and had a whole different thing that was going on. But he was very, very, very nice. Nice man.
So you'll appreciate this story. I had a thing as a teenager watching Macmillan and Wife. I had a thing for Susan St. James, and then back maybe 7 or 8 years ago, I was at an event, and I looked at a table across from me, and Susan St. James was sitting at the table all by herself, and I said to my wife, I got to do this. I have to. And I walked over to her, and I said, I'm sorry to bother you, but my 13-year-old self would never have forgiven me if I didn't come over and introduce myself. And she was so wonderful, she said, my husband has gone to get a drink. Now's our chance to get away.
Aww.
Yeah, it's nice when the people that you thought highly of when you were young turn out to be good people.
Yeah. I've met her once at a Super Bowl game that we all went to, I think NBC was hosting it that year, and like the cast of ER and the cast of Frasier and all these casts were together at one of the producers of Frasier had a house in Arizona where it was in Scottsdale, and David Lee, and he had a party, and it was like David Lee gave the Super Bowl party of the year. Like Susan St. James was there, Don Olmeyer, her husband, I can't remember. I know I need to.
Dick Ebersol.
Dick Ebersol. And, you know, just all these cats and all these people were walking around. It was very glamorous. Very, very glamorous the night I met her. She's
Dick,
very nice.
And Dick Ebersol was great too, because he came back and I told him the story. He said, well, I'm just glad I met her first, because clearly you had a shot. I guess.
Yeah.
Well, we can't wait to see. We'll keep watching for it. Kevin can go leap himself when you're in that, and we'll keep our eyes open for what I was doing while you were breeding. It is always so great to catch up with you, Perry. Thank you for making a little time for us today.
Of course. Thank you, Rich. It's always great talking with you. Always so much fun. Thank
All right.
you.
Good luck with those daughters. I don't care what they say. You're very smart.
Okay. Thank you. You are too.
Well, thank you. My son probably thinks otherwise, but that's all right.
I know. No, your son, one day he will know, and mine will too.
All right. Thank you, Perry. Be well, and we'll catch you again soon.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you.
That's the wonderful Perry Gilpin with us here on Downtown, getting things underway on a Monday afternoon.